In the studio this morning, I have Dave Brewer. He is from America, has been living in New Zealand for 28 years, and was involved in the solar industry, and today he's a founding director of A New New Zealand, a charitable trust at www.anewnz.org.nz. So, kia ora and good morning and welcome to the program, Dave.
Thanks, Tim, for inviting me. I really appreciate that. It's great.
Dave, with A New New Zealand, how did that come into being and what is its aims?
Well, it began with my wife and I choosing to have some leadership workshops across the country back in 1998. And we had invited an American facilitator over here to hold leadership workshops on the subject of collaboration, peer collaboration. So we had workshops that were held in Auckland, Wellington, and Christchurch. And then alongside that, we had public presentations that delivered the results of the workshops to the public. And we invited the key leaders in each one of those cities or one of those regions to participate on stage with our facilitator, who was Dr. Jean Houston. So we attracted over 2,000 people to those events and created a lot of interest and a lot of energy around that. And we became quite interested in what those leaders had to say about sustainability and their areas of interest. So what came out of that immediately was a consensus that what was needed was the development of a network of networks in New Zealand that would facilitate change in a positive direction for the country. And so a few years later, A New New Zealand was formed and was born out of that work. So we had a set of trustees and did quite a bit of public presentation, workshops, and forums on the subject that would help develop a shared vision in the country, which was our primary interest. So in 2003, we invited Dr. Ron Coleman out from Canada to talk about his work in genuine progress indicators. Well, this is all born out because of a concern about the GDP, which is the gross domestic product, and its misuse. As all of you probably know, the GDP is a measure of economic activity in a country and is, however, used incorrectly to represent the well-being of society, so that if GDP goes up, the politicians and business people and other people are elated and think that we're well off and we don't have to concern ourselves about much else, but just keep up the GDP growth. And if the GDP goes down, attitudes go down along with it, and a great concern, and all the attention is placed upon economic growth. And the problem with that is that economic growth has very little correlation with the many elements of public well-being. So the GPI, which is the Genuine Progress Indicator work, was created in deference to the GDP and is composed of usually between 20 and 30 different components rather than a single measurement. It measures social well-being, it measures economic well-being for the public, and it measures environmental well-being. And so it is believed that it is a much better representation of the true progress of society and the well-being of society. So Ron came out, as I mentioned, in 2003. Every time we've run him out 5 times now, and every time he's come out, he's spoken to the public, and he's been brought to local government to do workshops for them, and we've taken him to Wellington to give interdepartmental workshops for government. And the first time he came out, MSD, the Ministry for Social Development, became quite interested in him and felt that his approach to GPI was superior to anything that they had heard before. Now, a little story about that is the original GPI work set out to create a single indicator, as the GDP is, to be competitive with it. So they felt, well, if we can show where when the GDP goes up and the genuine progress indicator actually goes down, it'll draw people's attention to say, what's going on here, and look into it further. Now, we're not taking that tack of creating a single indicator because there's difficulties at academic level about the legitimacy of doing that. And it also is flawed with the need of creating weightings for each one of the social, environmental, and economic indicators that the public would never agree on, because that goes back to fundamental political differences between the right and the left. So what Ron is doing is keeping those measurements as they are and porting on them as they are, because then they can contribute directly to policy setting and to action that communities can take to do something about it, where if the GDP goes up or down, no one knows what to do about it. And so it's a very highly respected methodology to deal with the excesses that the economic focus is causing us to have in the world at this time. So when Ron came out again in 2005 and 2006, and when he came out in 2006, something different happened, and the political establishment in New Zealand became interested in him. We got a call from the Māori Party that asked if Ron would speak for 2 days at Otaki, at the university there, on the subject of GPI and present a workshop so that the Māori people could understand that. Now, I might just mention that since that time that happened in 2006, the Māori people have picked up on this and are developing their own GPI system, and they've responded very, very well. But we're nonpartisan by nature, and so we recognized that there was a problem in just leaving it as it was naturally going forward. And it required me going to the National Party, the Labour Party, and the Green Parties to get them on board also. The problem with the GDP is that it measures everything and adds them all up, so that if money is made from crime, or if money is made from pollution, or if money is made from sickness, it gets added into the GDP as to be a beneficial quantity. And of course, that simply is not true. So there's many components in the GDP that need to be subtracted rather than added to the sum. And what the GPI does then is it breaks those components down in a way that enables that to be done and to be recognized for what they are. In the system that Dr. Ron Coleman has set up, he does a full cost accounting of every one of the measurements made, so that, for instance, if the air pollution is found to go down, a full cost accounting does a cost-benefit analysis to establish what the cost on society is for that happening. So it externalizes costs that are otherwise internalized. Say, for instance, when air pollution goes up, people get sick. And who pays for that? Well, either the people pay for it or the government pays for it. This needs to be recognized in a healthy society so that proper action can be taken. So the GPI addresses those kinds of things. In 2006, we found that the Labour Party was unresponsive. The National Party caucus met with Ron, the Green Party caucus met, and Māori, of course, met with Ron. But the Labour Party, obviously, being in government, was too busy at that time and couldn't get their attention. So what happened was the 2 days after Ron flew out, the Labour Research Unit called me and asked if Ron could please speak at Marianne Street's Caucus on National Identity. And I said, well, we'd be thrilled for that to happen, but he's not here. And so I offered to be a proxy for him, and they accepted. Well, this shifted everything, and a few months later, I found myself speaking to the Caucus on National Identity and gave a presentation for the benefits of GPI. And in that, I gave a recommendation of 5 things that the New Zealand government could be doing if they were interested in forwarding the GPI. And one of them was developing global comparability, because one of the difficulties in any country addressing the GPI is that it doesn't have a global comparability. So when I brought that up, the caucus got very energized and they lit up like a bulb and got very excited about it. So I left and created the beginnings of a project to bring over six countries that would start this process of developing a comparable set of GPIs. And so I sent that out to Helen Clark, and she sent a message back that she was very interested and wished us well and would support us, and passed it on to her departments, which included MSD and STATS. And so at that time, I became quite involved with STATS in the process, because this project that we were creating got linked up with the OECD. And the OECD process is a statistically based process, so it mainly required the statistics department to be responsive. So one of the requirements of being involved with the OECD was that we had to have some workshops here on the subject before we could bring any countries over to engage in this process. So Anu New Zealand then co-ventured with the Ministry for Social Development and with Statistics New Zealand to create three workshops early in 2007. And Anu New Zealand developed those workshops, invited about 100 key leaders from across the country to attend those. And so we had 86 come from across sectors, from community, from business, from government, from local government, and from civil society. And so that event turned out very, very successful. And I, as a result of that, wrote a briefing paper of what I heard come out of those three workshops. And I took it back to each one of the government department participants that were part of operation there. And I asked them, is this what you heard? And if it is, would you support it? And each one of the government departments said yes to both questions, and that included Treasury, included MED, the Ministry for Economic Development, the Ministry for Social Development, the Ministry for the Environment, and, of course, Statistics New Zealand. And so we had what was a group of departments that were really in agreement. And one of the outcomes of these workshops was that there was an agreement for New Zealand to move forward and create their own set of well-being and sustainability indicators for the country, and that it should be bottom-up driven. It should be driven by the public. At those workshops, we had two overseas speakers, one from Australia, from Melbourne, Professor Michael Silveras, who is a leader in the OECD activity on alternative indicators. And we had a man from Canada speak about the Canadian Index of Well-Being, which is a comparable kind of a project to what we're developing here now. And the Canadian work is driven by civil society. It's actually primarily financed by civil society, and it's a multi-million dollar project. It's very ambitious, and a leader. Canada's a leader in this whole field. So we sort of set out to emulate this, but when we spoke with New Zealand government officials, they said no, they didn't like that, and they suggested that we form a partnership that governs the project from civil society, from business, from local government, and from central government. And so that's been our objective all along now, is to form that partnership which really holds the development of this indicator system. So with the agreement that we got from each of the government departments that what was being reported was accurate, and that there wasn't an agreement to form a collaborative project between departments and between local government and civil society, etc., that Anu New Zealand chose to lead this effort. And Anu New Zealand is a small charitable trust, but we were in that sense given a mandate to do that. And so I've been busy in the last year and a half selling the concept and developing our relationships with local government and government departments. And to that end, we completed a contract with local government to do a piece of research for them on helping them with their community outcomes and their LTCCP work, which is the long-term community council plan work that they're doing with communities, which is very relevant to what it is that we're doing. And we also acquired a contract then with Statistics New Zealand, who is also developing a top-down set of sustainability indicators to do community consultation for them. And so we had two good-sized workshops, in one in Auckland, one in Wellington, that Stats and ANU New Zealand sponsored here late last year. And so we've completed that work, and that information is available on the website and has produced very good results. Statistics New Zealand was very, very happy with that, so we're proceeding to form the project as planned now.
I'm talking with Dave Brewer, founder of ANU New Zealand, on new systems of accountability on how a country is run and where money is spent and how we balance the books. So where's the next move, Dave?
Well, we're in the process of developing our relationship with Brian Gould right now as being part of the next move, and that story is rather interesting. I'm on the advisory committee for Statistics New Zealand developing their sustainability indicators, and I realized at one point in their following a United Nations framework that a lot of their wording and their intentions have followed what's called a neoliberal model, which is a model fostering the principles of free market, privatization, monetization, etc., that we're familiar with having come out of the Roger Nomics introduction 20 years ago. And so I became quite concerned about that because I have a personal opinion that neoliberalism and sustainability are mutually incompatible. As long as the world is being driven by the neoliberal principles, it is impossible for us ever to attain sustainability. And it's not one of those things that you see in the newspapers because it's not a topic that anybody wants to discuss. And I made that declaration. I decided I think I'd like to do something about this rather than just talk about it. So I had met Brian Gould a number of years ago and admired his work. Brian, of course, was the vice chancellor of Waikato University for 10 years. And he's a New Zealander who spent most of his life in the UK in the political arena there, in the Labour Party. And at one point, he was in competition for running for the position of Prime Minister with Tony Blair and lost by just a couple of votes. And so he's a really interesting man, but has written two really interesting books. One is The Democracy Sham, which exposes how the free flow of global capital across nations is in the process of destroying the democratic systems that underlie those nations. And he's a very courageous man to be talking about this because, again, it's not a popular subject. I had met him and recognized his value, so I called him to see if he would be interested in creating a think tank that would think through what is an alternative to neoliberalism. Now, you might remember when Ruth Richardson was economic minister, she created this saying that there is no other alternative, and that came out of Margaret Thatcher's work and Ronald Reagan's work, that they didn't want any debate about it. They didn't want people to think about this. They just wanted people to believe there was no other alternative, of course, which is an absolute lie. It's not true. So my approach to Brian was to see if he might be interested, along with ANU New Zealand, in the auspices of what matters most to New Zealanders, to create a think tank that would actually create an alternative to neoliberalism. And he said he was interested, so we're proceeding down that line, and Brian has indicated that he would be interested in being the chairman of the trust that would govern this work, representing government, civil society, business, and local government that I mentioned before. So this is the direction things are going right now. This year, we are continuing the community engagement work that we started last year with Statistics New Zealand and are setting out to have a number of workshops in Auckland, Wellington, and Christchurch, and Brian has agreed to run some forums in Auckland, Wellington, and Christchurch also. So that's one of the key focuses of our activities this year, together with a fundraising campaign to get the project formalized and a trust formed around it and a stake put in the ground to make this thing happen.
So if we can go ahead into the future, Dave, say 5 years hence, how does the GPI then fit into how we see ourselves as a cohesive society?
Well, an integral part of this work is our work with civil society. We're engaged right now with 25 civil society organizations. Most of them are umbrella organizations that want to participate in this work. And what we're interested in doing is creating a voice of civil society that can produce a balance between business and government in terms of the decisions that are made on our behalf. And so it's to give voice to the people through institutions like the Council for Trade Unions and the Consumers Institute, ANGOA, Forest and Bird, the ECHO, the various civil society organizations, or NGOs you might call them, or nonprofit organizations that are doing work in this area. So a couple of the benefits that we see coming from this work is not only just comes out of GPI itself, but comes out of the development of this empowered civil society. And so we're quite excited about that happening, because then we can see the possibility of a balance being brought back in, where the imbalance caused by focus on economic issues only will be balanced out by those kinds of considerations. What's best for families and what's best for Faunau and what's best for our environment to be part of the dialogue along with economics. So we're interested in economics that's designed for the people and not for the elite that it is now designed for.
Dave, as an extension of this initiative in New Zealand, what is happening in, say, Canada and Australia and other places? Are we going to be able to extend it so that it'll embrace the global political and economic sphere?
Well, I certainly don't want to give the impression that New Zealand's the only one interested in this. There's a vast interest right now, particularly with the global economic meltdown. We're seeing a lot of literature coming out of very substantial sources that says one way to deal with this global economic crash is to recognize that we're making the wrong measurements. It's recognized that GDP has a flawed use to it. To that end, there was an international workshop last year put on by OECD and a number of other organizations called Beyond GDP. This is a massive forum of about 600 people that came together around this. So you see there's a lot of interest. The most advanced country that's doing this work right now is Canada, in developing their Canadian Index of Well-being. And as I mentioned, I'm working very closely with Professor Michael Salveris from Australia. You might remember a number of months ago that Australia had this future summit that attracted 1,000 participants. And one of the initiatives that came out of that work of Australia was to develop a national set of well-being indicators, just as we are. And so we have the wonderful prospect of working alongside these two really fine countries and developing ours, because we can learn from each other and we can benefit from each other so much. So that's one of the exciting things that's happening right now. But there's a lot of interest all over the world. Joseph Stiglitz, for instance, who was the chief economist for the World Bank and became very critical of the IMF and the World Bank, and he's a serious critic of the present form of globalization, has been contracted by France, by the president of France, to create an alternative set of indicators for France. And so he's the chairman of a group of 8 people who are actually doing that right now. And so we're quite interested in seeing what comes out of that. Like I said, there's a lot of work going on. Now, one of the things that we're doing in forming these indicators is recognizing that there's value in connecting what we're calling horizontal linkages between indicators. And so what that means is that the question might arise is, what are the determinants of health? Well, some of the determinants of health are economics. Some of them are the environment, of course. And some of them are other social conditions, education, for instance. And so by linking across, we can determine what the determinants are for health and what the determinants are for a good economy, what the determinants are for a healthy environment. So our work is going to include those what we call horizontal linkages. We also recognize that the government policies will either aid or abet the results that we're aiming at getting, and so we have vertical linkages set up to look at how each of the primary government policies actually contribute to our work or don't, and we will be reporting on that. So it's quite an integral system. The reason that I mention that right now is that Joseph Stiglitz in his work is going down a parallel path, and he's advocating doing the same kind of thing. So we're definitely not alone, but one wonderful part of New Zealand is small enough that we can do very courageous and very bold things, and we have the mantle of leadership globally. We're listened to on many moral issues and ethical issues, and we could have a real contribution globally in terms of what we're doing.
A lot of New Zealanders would like to see that too. Small country, we can move, we're maneuverable. Mm. And Dave, you have other directions as well, and there's one called the strategic direction, transcending the global crisis. And of course, this crisis is widening as we speak, and there's a need for leadership, for courage as well.
Well, the crises that we're seeing, of course, the one that's up in our face right now is economic, but we also have environmental crises and social crises. They're all occurring at the same time, really. But they're playing very much in favor of supporting what it is that we're doing, because people are starting to realize that there's something wrong here. Something's gone off, and what are we doing wrong? And so the right questions are starting to be asked, and our work and what matters most to New Zealanders are set out to answer that. We have a set of strategic policies which give rise to that. Now, when we ask what matters most to New Zealanders, we say it's a long-term citizens-based initiative. When we ask why it is that we're doing it, is to stimulate national renewal and help shape the future of New Zealand by redefining progress from simple economic terms to a broad set of goals for all people, just as we've been talking about. When we ask how we're going to do this, this is through a network of networks from civil society, business, and government that creates three functions: a think tank, a public shared vision, the development of a set of indicators which informs policy matters and empowers civil society to take action. We haven't talked at all about the public shared vision, but the vision will come out of the public discussions that we have set up for the progress indicators. So these two things go hand in hand. Now, some of the principles and values that the project holds is participative democracy, sustainability, self-determination, cooperation and collaboration, respect for people, justice and equity, informing and inspiring people in the search for well-being for all people, seeing the world as a whole interconnected system, and being nonpartisan. And some of the benefits that we see for the public, the benefit of the work will, among many things, will be having the opportunity to shape the future they want. For communities, is to develop resilient and regenerative communities. For civil society organizations, it's developing a strong coalition to achieve more by working in collaboration with companion organizations and developing a voice of civil society. For business, it's developing a productive sector that has the full support of the people. For government, it's providing policy and reporting and democracy tools to assist them in serving the people. tapping valuable resources for achieving national progress through the public. Local government, similarly, will increase public participation in tapping the valuable resources for achieving progress in local government work. So we're very excited about how this might go forward. You might ask, well, how does this affect me? What can I do about it? What I might ask you to do is to go to our website, click on Forming a Vision. You have an opportunity to submit your vision for the country on the website right now, if you'd like, and that will contribute to a large aggregate of thousands of people who will be forwarding their visions. We have a linkage on the website right now called Visions from Inspired New Zealanders, and that is about 120 leaders, many of them that you will be very familiar with and know, and I suggest clicking on those. They're very substantial 1,500-word statements on what they want for the country, and they're great.
They're superb.
They're really great, yeah. You can add your vision. There's also a blogging capability right now. There's a blog up there that discusses this GPI-GDP issue, and you're most welcome, and we invite you to participate in discussing your views on that blog. And there will be, like I say, many workshops and forums this next year in the three cities. And so we invite your participation. So if you find yourself interested in any aspect of what's been discussed here, I invite you to go to the website and find out more about it. Please register on the website, and that'll put you on the email list. We have about 1,500 people that are on the email list right now, and we'd love to have you on. And that's a way for you to keep abreast of what's going on and find ways of participating in what it is we're doing.
So this is a community, society, pulling together. This is, you know, participating in the greater picture. And as you say, you're giving the responsibility to the person, the man in the street, the woman in the street, to shape their destiny.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And it's very much of a collaborative process. When we had our initial work OECD-oriented workshops, they're one of the agreements of all of the 85 leaders that were present then, was that they wanted it to be based upon the wonderful work that's gone on here already. And I might mention, for instance, the quality of life work that's been developed by local government is an absolutely wonderful piece of work that we're going to be working with alongside those people. And also the Ministry for Social Development have developed a social report. And so MFE, of course, has developed their environmental indicators. So this is very much of a collaborative process and project that will be working with a lot of different agencies and a lot of different organizations.
Dave, finally, in the context of life, of enjoying life as being an individual with a family, being part of community, how is your optimism for the localized community and also the global community at this present moment?
Well, I have a very high level of optimism. I suppose I might be characterized too as feeling it's really important that we understand the nature of the problems that we're facing, and without putting undue emphasis on that at all, because if our energy goes there, then we don't have the energy to change anything, you know. But it's extremely important to understand what's caused the crisis that we're seeing before us right now. And it's very deep, it's systemic, meaning it has to do with the worldview that we've been holding and the values that we've been holding for a good 5,000 years. For instance, one way that you can describe what's happening is that the empire era is coming to a climax. And it's gone about as far as it can get because the empire has become the whole world now. Countries vying and multiple countries vying for control of the whole world. And so I believe from a scientific point of view that I believe in the evolutionary process, not in the conventional way, but in the sense that when we are living out a particular worldview and it has completed its life cycle, that it starts becoming the problem rather than the solution to things. And the worldview that we've been holding for many hundreds and thousands of years now is of that category. And so we need to find and identify what is our appropriate role in the world? What is our worldview that we need to bring forward? Paul Hawkins is a real wonderful book out called Blessed Unrest. It's interesting because when we read the newspapers and when we look about us, we think, oh my God, how can something else go wrong? All we see is violence on television. There's no hope and all of this kind of thing. And you can easily get into a very depressed state because of what's going on. But what Paul is saying is just so significant. He has observed that there's a lot of organizations throughout the world now that are they're actually getting on and creating a different world, a better world, along the lines of what we've been talking about. And so when he started counting them, it was quite funny because he said, oh, it's in hundreds of thousands, and then he went to millions, and I think he's up to like 10 million now. Independent activities and organizations, some of them large, some of them small, that are actually creating our new world. And this never gets into the press. We don't read about that. We don't know anything about it because it's so distributed. What's wonderful about the distributed nature of it, too, is that the economic powers that are driving the world system can't do anything about it either because it has no center. It has, there's no place that they can attack. They can't bomb anybody. So Paul is saying, hey, there's a transformation going on right now, and many of us don't even know it. And yet many of us are part of it, actually, and don't know it. So this is one of my points of optimism, too. And that I believe that human nature has the capacity of bringing forward those qualities which are not given credence in the economic system. The economic system forwards the fact that we're only interested in ourselves and we're only interested in the money that we can accrue, etc., and that we are basically not good people. And yet we know that the world is held together by the fact that we are cooperative and collaborative. Business would fall apart tomorrow if there wasn't cooperation and collaboration between business organizations. But that's not recognized. All you hear about is the need for competition and building the competitive model. And so it's all out of kilter. But we can rely on the fact that there's something marvelous going on right now, and that this transformation that our project is sort of based on these principles is one of the many projects that are going on across the world, and something remarkable is happening. And it's anybody's answer to know how life will go forward, but I'm very optimistic that when the crises reach a certain crescendo, that we'll have an awakening, and people will say in general, my God, how did we get here? We don't have to live our lives this way. Let's do it differently. And I believe very deeply that we're approaching that time probably within the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, a very, very short period of time. So it's with great interest that I'm watching what's going on, and I invite you to be one of those organizations, if it's not part of what we're doing. Find the area of interest that you have to want to change the world to a better place, and there's plenty of organizations around to do that in the social, environmental, and economic arena.
And it's the volunteers that are doing it, really. They're like, in many cases, the invisible strands everywhere throughout society. You're seeing volunteers.
Yeah. And what's interesting in the GDP type of economic system is that volunteering is not given any economic value. And in the GPI system, that volunteer work is given economic value and is given a deeper value than just economics. But it's recognized as being the glue that holds society together. It's not just an incidental thing that's happening over on the side. It's an essential part of our society. And so the volunteer sector will be and is the force that will make these changes happen.
And bringing up children, the mums, all the mums in the world who are found themselves at home, are doing all this volunteer work all the time, and they're not getting acknowledged, are they?
Now, placing those kinds of things in economic terms was sort of against my better judgment, but I read something in the paper this week, actually, that some global organization had evaluated that The volunteer time spent by the typical housewife was something like $140,000 a year. Well, that's interesting because it really starts to place in economic perspective what's happening here. But of course, we need to get beyond the economic, seeing things just in economic terms, and see that are these deeper values of creating meaningful relationships and finding that our love relationships are really much more important than having money in the bank. And we're going to find, I think, in the next few years where money in the bank doesn't mean very much.
And everybody will come together and we're going to be a lot more cooperative and a lot more kinder to each other as well.
Yeah, probably because there'll be a real need to do that. But I think the human being has the capacity to do that. We're not only self-interested, but we're also loving individuals. And so we need a system, social system set up that actually maximizes those positive qualities in humans rather than the one that we have right now, which maximizes the negative qualities. And I see that is one of my visions, that I see that as we move forward, going through this fantastic transitions that we're going through, we're going to see the nature of human, the human condition and the nature of human beings to be very, very positive, and we can build on that.
And a small country can bring it together a lot easier than a large country, too.
Well, that's why I'm here, Tim. Yeah, many people ask me why did I come here? And of course, when I came 28 years ago, it was a great question that New Zealanders would look at me and say, "Why are you coming here?" And it became sort of a joke. But looking back on it, I recognize that even then the world was in great transition, and that we had a better chance. I had a better chance to contribute to that process in a small country like New Zealand rather than the United States. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but that was my dream. And so the reason that I came here was not only because of the beauty of the nature of New Zealand, but also I thought that the transformational opportunities existed here, and I believe that I'm experiencing that in the work that I'm doing right now.
Excellent, Dave. I'm really glad you're here. Thank you very much for giving New Zealanders a template in many ways, or assisting New Zealanders to find a template to be able to bring about a new way of community, a new way of living, a new way of being.
Well, thanks, Tim. I don't feel that I'm necessarily making a major contribution to anything, because a lot of the things we're talking about is being done right now. And it really is up to the people of New Zealand to exercise their innovation and creativity and come together and make this happen. And it'll go far beyond any of the kinds of words that I've been using here today.
Lovely. Thank you, Dave.
Thanks, Tim.